Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Dennis Lehane says Alifair Burke is one of the finest young crime writers working today. Her ninth book, If You Were Here, hinges on the fleeting reappearance of a woman who vanished 10 years earlier. Manhattan journalist McKenna Jordan thinks she has a scoop when she obtains a video showing a woman pulling a boy from harm on subway tracks, but when the mystery woman appears to be Jordan's close friend who disappeared, the story becomes increasingly complex. Burke is a former deputy district attorney and currently teaches criminal law at Hofstra University. Again, the title of the new book is If You Were Here. It's a great pleasure to welcome Alifair Burke to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
A delight. Give us a sense of the point where in your career you knew that you wanted to write novels.
Knowing you want to do something and actually doing it are two different things.
Absolutely.
It raises that idea of what does it mean to know something. I wanted to do it a few years into my work as a prosecutor. I worked in Portland, Oregon as a deputy district attorney, and I had no even fantasies of being a writer, but I had always been a ferocious reader. My mom was a librarian and my dad is a writer and an English professor, and we were a house that was filled with books. And so I've always been an avid reader, and specifically I was a huge fan of crime fiction. So I was working at the district attorney's office, and then at night and on the weekends I'd load up on my crime fiction reading. And it really was a few years into that job that I realized that I would go to work during the day and I would see this world and hear these voices and this very stylized way of speaking. I basically lived my days in an incredible atmosphere for crime fiction. And I thought, maybe I have something to offer the genre. And I started thinking about my workplace as a setting. I started thinking about a character, and I started thinking about a possible plot, but I didn't write a word until after I had left the DA's office. So I guess I started my first book in 2000.
There is certainly not a shortage in the names on a list of people who have had that job as either a lawyer or somewhere within the criminal justice system, who has gone on to write novels. What do you think it is about that profession for ideas and ultimately for even a commonality between a writer and someone who would enter that field?
Yeah, if you think about what you need to be a writer, you have to, one, just be able to write, to get the words on the page, but you also need to have some kind of inspirational substance. And I think a lot of lawyers have both of those. A lot of my friends who are writers started out as lawyers, and a lot of them started out as journalists. And if you think about what the two have in common, there aren't a lot of people who every single day are used to flexing those writing muscles, that sit down and put pen to page, or more likely, fingers to a keyboard, and actually get their thoughts down on paper. It takes a kind of discipline that I think a lot of us lose over the years if you're not using it. So lawyers and journalists tend to use those muscles, and they're also part of a world, usually, that is fertile for telling stories. And you have to know how to tell a story. A lot of people think lawyers are actually, some of them are horrible storytellers. They can be kind of dry at parties, is the reputation. But good litigators really have to know how to tell a story in a way that's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you think about how a trial works, it's not a natural narrative structure. You are forced to tell a story through witnesses, one witness after the next, not necessarily the order in which things happened. And you actually get fairly creative about how to piece together, in a sort of artificial way, a naturally appealing story so that the jury can understand what happened despite the structure of a trial. So, and journalists, of course, they're reporting the news, but hopefully they're reporting in a way that's compelling. So, I don't think I would be the same kind of writer I am if I hadn't had that job.
So let us talk about what brought you to this story. And as I mentioned, it is your ninth book, If You Were Here, and it is a standalone. What is the pleasure of a standalone?
Well, it's either a pleasure or it's torture, depending on how you're feeling about it.
Okay, so let me rephrase the question. Which was it for you?
Well, of my 9 novels, 2 have been standalones and 7 have been series books. The freedom, if one looks at it that way, or the responsibility, I guess, that comes with a standalone is this is going to be the beginning and end of the characters in terms of the reader's relationship with them. That can be very freeing in a way because you don't, you know, part of me when I work on a series book, for example, I feel an incredible responsibility to the characters and to their future that any decisions I make for their life course be one that we can all live with. You know, I want to make sure that I make good choices for them that doesn't, frankly, mess up the books for years down the road. Something I, you know, all of a sudden somebody's got a bunch of kids running around and I haven't planned for that. It can ruin a series, or you kill the wrong person, or you marry them off to the wrong person. It can really affect the series. So with the series characters, you have them, you want them to change and you want them to evolve, but it tends to be a little more incremental to keep them interesting over hopefully a very long arc and to keep flow of their character natural. With a standalone, you want the characters to evolve, but it has to be quicker. And so the story sometimes itself is bigger, but oftentimes the effect that story has on the characters is much larger than you might see in a series book. So, for example, in If You Were Here, I think, and I guess it's for the reader to decide if they agree with this, I think McKenna Jordan is a different person at the end of the book. She's the same person, obviously, but she's learned a lot and she's changed a lot over the course of the book. And hopefully so has everybody else. And that the reader sees that and they can shut the book and feel okay with not seeing more of her if she never comes back again.
With that said, and I find this always fascinating, in speaking to many, many crime writers, they will say that there is something about a character that when they are done with them, that they think, well, you know, someday I could come back to that character. So I guess the question is twofold. One, going into it intentionally as to this is going to be a one-time shot, does that kind of make the decision for you? Or is it at the end when you say, okay, we've done enough and I doubt we could ever come back to this? Or is the door always open?
Yeah, I guess it's not a huge spoiler if you say someone's still alive.
Right, no.
As long as someone's still alive, I guess the door is open. You know, ironically, I'm working on my 5th Ellie Hatcher novel right now, and Ellie Hatcher is a recurring character. She's a detective, a police detective with the NYPD. The first Ellie Hatcher book, Dead Connection, was supposed to be a standalone, and she just happened to be the investigative narrator. And I knew at the end of that book that Ellie would be back. The way I finished the book, I knew that it didn't actually work as a standalone. Frankly, it can be read as a standalone, but the big, huge change to the character where you're okay never seeing them again, I didn't feel like that was the kind of person Ellie had turned out to be as I wrote her. When I finished it, I thought, ugh, you know, I really have to keep learning more about this woman. And there's still so much to her that is still plaguing her. Like she doesn't have an ending yet. And I'd like to be writing about her for years and years and years. McKenna Jordan, I have no current intentions to go back to her. I'm surprised, though, at how many people have read the book and they're now saying, I want the next Ellie Hatcher book and I also want the next McKenna book. So clearly she's resonated with enough people that they think that she has the ability to be a series character. That's not really my intention with her. She lives in the same world. There are actually little references in the books for extremely, like, I'm a very geeky reader who catches these little tiny details. The geeky reader who's read any of my previous books and then reads this one will recognize that McKenna lives in the same world as Ellie Hatcher. So it's possible she could kind of show up in Ellie's Manhattan.
Do you like looking at the story through the eyes of a journalist?
Well, you know, I've never been a journalist. I have friends who are. My father actually was a reporter for a while, so I kind of know his take on this, and I know some crime writers who were journalists. McKenna's a former prosecutor turned journalist, so it wasn't that hard for me to put her eyes on. And she's a bit disgruntled. You know, I think when part of the plot has to deal with has to do with the ending of her own career as a prosecutor. She didn't go out on her own terms. She's never really been happy about the fact that she's not a prosecutor anymore. And she's somewhat of a reluctant journalist. And I think what she wants to be doing is very highbrow legal commentary. You know, she'd probably like to be discussing the implications of Supreme Court opinions. And instead, she works for this sort of tabloidish magazine where she's just as likely to be, you know, sitting outside of Jennifer Aniston's townhouse trying to catch a picture of her picking out a wedding cake for her pending nuptials. She starts out a little distrustful, really, of her own career choices. And it's that search for, you know, the subway story is kind of somewhere in the middle. Here you have a woman who jumps out of nowhere, seemingly, and rescues this kid from an ongoing train. And there's been a subway hero story before in New York, so it's somewhat familiar the kind of heated attention that that story will get, oftentimes short-lived. But to McKenna, she sees the potential to write a really interesting story. Like, what is it that makes one person act like a hero when everybody else stands around screaming? And so she really wants to find that woman to be able to tell that story, which she sees as a meritorious story. And then, of course, she's shocked to see to recognize the woman's face as a friend who disappeared 10 years ago.
Allifer Burke is the author of the new novel, If You Were Here, a novel of suspense. It is published by Harper. What brought you to wanting to explore this type of relationship, secrecy in a relationship where one party, if not both parties, could be lying about their past?
Right. So the secrecy I think you're referring to is not only, you know, what has Susan been up to, if she's still around, if it is Susan, what has she been up to for the last 10 years and what kinds of secrets was she keeping from her friends? But the way McKenna knows her own husband, Patrick, is through Susan Houtman. Susan was their one mutual friend, and then she disappeared quite quickly after introducing the two of them in passing. So 10 years later, McKenna and Patrick have built this life together that didn't involve Susan. And now that McKenna's sort of obsessed with finding out what happened to their mutual friend, she starts to realize that maybe not only was Susan keeping secrets, but her own husband may have too. You know, I think that that's always incredible territory for a writer is distrust, right? Because at some level, we all make decisions every day about who we're going to trust, and we live with those. If you sit around second guessing that, you're a very paranoid person. You're probably a deeply unhappy person. But at some level, it's not that hard to break trust. So there's a moment in the book, for example, when McKenna realizes that she's a very rational person, and as much as she can't admit it, it's undeniable that her husband has lied to her about something. I can't let it, I won't say what it is, but it's undeniable that there's no rational explanation that he has lied to her. And if you've ever caught someone you love in a lie, it does, it breaks you at some level. And so it's something that becomes a theme of the book, but stepping back from it, you know, each book when I'm done, sometimes I go back and look at it and I realize it's like having your own therapy on paper. It's like, what was I thinking in the year that I wrote this book? And I don't think it's a coincidence that when I started this book, it was about 10 years since I had made some really big decisions in my life. I had left the district attorney's office and decided to teach and write. I had left Oregon and moved to New York. I had left one relationship and was just starting another one, no overlap, in case that wasn't ambiguous, in case that came out ambiguously. But I had made these huge decisions 10 years ago that in my life worked out quite well. But when I go back and I look at this book, I think one of the things that might stick with readers when they're done with it, yeah, it's a fun book and hopefully it's a page turner and you read it on the beach and it's a lot of fun, I hope. But hopefully the thing that kind of holds it all together, the decisions we make that we may not realize are big at the time, how they affect our lives and how they affect the lives of the people around us. and how much our lives are shaped by the presence of the people we bring into our world. And so the title of the book, If You Were Here, is very narrowly a reference to McKenna kind of wondering, what if Susan had never left? But I think larger than that, it's that moment that all of us might have when we're being particularly introspective about what if life had been different. You know, if I had made some other decision on that day, or if I had been with one other person and not that person, you know, how would that have shaped the arc of my life? And more importantly, is it ever possible to go back? You know, can you go back and try to get the life you would have otherwise had? And that's part of this journey that I think McKenna and Patrick and their friend Susan are all kind of on.
And this is, again, that period of time of a decade, of 10 years. And it seems as though you were thinking a lot about relationships and how they change, about how a marriage changes, about what can happen over that period of time.
Yeah, I wanted that to be very much a part of the book. You know, it does start out to some extent. Whenever I start a new book, it's hard. I say that as someone sort of still at the beginning of a new book. Part of it is, you know, the setup. I thought that the setup of someone looking for a lost person, it's a familiar setup to fans of crime fiction, but it's one that's very rich with potential, because it's endless plotting possibilities. You know, this one involves journalistic scandal and eco-terrorists and a 10-year-old shooting that ended McKenna's career. I mean, there's so much you can do with that plot structure. But I think once I started thinking, well, then how long has the woman been missing? And why does it affect her that the woman disappeared? When I really started thinking in terms of character, that's when the book really clicked for me. And particularly when I decided, you know, 10 years ago, and I still think it's because of my own life that I thought 10 years ago, because for me, that's when really big life-altering decisions were getting made. And I started thinking about what was going on in the world 10 years ago and what was going on in New York 10 years ago and how I could make that interesting. And so that really, that's when I knew that that was the book I wanted to write.
The whole idea of having this mutual friend and then the discussions that take place in the book between the two characters of the nature of the relationship, what they remember about that person, and trying to come, in many ways, trying to come to some sort of common ground, and really how difficult that is.
Right, because a lot of the book, it's always hard to not give stuff away. A lot of the book it's memories of Susan. You don't necessarily, you don't see a lot of Susan in the present. And it's conflicting memories of Susan, and that's not surprising. It's not surprising because one, there's one character, and it's just to make sure the reader knows that I'm in on it. I understand that these are conflicting memories. One of the characters in a completely different context says memory is completely unreliable. You know, we choose what to prioritize. We choose how to remember things over the years. But also, people know different parts of a person's character. You know, to think that any human being is 100% consistent all the time is not consistent with reality. A lot of our behavior is situational. It's not that you're always a good person or you're always a bad person. So much of it is situational. So, putting together Susan's character through memories of other people was, for me, actually really fun as a writer, so I can't go on and say how I think it all comes together, but hopefully the reader thinks it comes together.
You mentioned earlier about the therapy quotient, and I'm interested in the fact of a deliberate choice of having the character Patrick, having gone to West Point, serving in the military, managing security at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is exactly the profile of your husband.
Right. So this married couple, they have the same professional profiles as my husband and I have. And part of that is I just thought it would be fun because when people meet us, people tend to think our backgrounds are interesting. We got to New York in very, very different ways. I was raised by you know, writers and a librarian, kind of an arts background, went to a little hippie college called Reed College in Portland, Oregon. Sean was in the Army and went to West Point and served in the military, and now he does private security. Well, he works security management at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And my sister, in fact, jokes around that we should go on The Amazing Race because we would absolutely dominate.
Oh, you should do that.
I consider a high compliment. But between the two of us, one of us can probably do whatever you stick in front of us. So him more than me, but I can pick up a slack here and there. So I thought, you know, that's kind of, it would be fun to have a couple with our professional backgrounds. I didn't, at first I really was, it was kind of a lark. A writer friend of mine, Lisa Unger, who's a very talented writer and a good friend, she was actually the one who's like, you got to write a book where the characters have these, are you and Sean? And it kind of just seemed like a funny little lark. And but then when I actually started thinking about, well, what would the setup be? And then, like I said, when I started thinking about 10 years ago, that would have been 2003. That's post 9/11. It's when the Iraq War started, and Patrick's ex-military, and so are all of his friends, including Susan. And that's when things really got interesting. I'm like, I think this is going to work.
I remember.
Oh, but in terms of the person, the therapy thing. Sorry, you know, my poor husband has to put up with a lot in terms of having me as a wife. But after I wrote the book, I was like, you know, have I really been fair to him? Because he was incredibly helpful in terms of, you know, for me to know anything about military culture. I knew nothing about it before I met him. I've had 10 years now to learn about it secondhand, basically. But he really helped me, you know, fill in stuff so that if he had told me that I wasn't being fair to the culture, I wasn't being fair to the characters, the military characters, I would have had a real problem. So having his approval for that part of the book was tremendously important to me. But then when he actually read it, I was like, I'm watching him read it. I'm like, oh, is he going to kill me? But he seems all right with it. I think he's trying to not take it personally that I made him taller in the book. He's 6'3" in the book.
I remember talking to Gillian Flynn about Gone Girl, her novel, and which is just this devastating look at a marriage that is just has all kinds of inconsistencies and secrets, and it is and what that was like to then present the manuscript to her husband. I can't even imagine what that. You don't want to be in the room, right?
He mostly read it on the subway, to and from the subway. So he'd come home, and there were a couple of days where he kind of called me out on some stuff that, again, I don't want to include spoilers, but
sure.
He was like, he's like, really? Like, it's not you. It's not you. It's fictional you.
But it gives you something to talk about.
Yeah.
But then that gets back to, you know, our original question of because it's so personal, is that maybe why you're thinking that you wouldn't want to, you know, do anything with this character or with these characters again?
Yeah, it's an excellent point. I mean, there's some, even as a one-off book, there's something sort of vain about, oh, you know, I thought my husband and I were so interesting that I would base two characters very loosely on us. But when it becomes not one book where it's very loosely based on you, but a book after book, you know, I think I'd be like, yeah, that's that lady who writes about her superhero self.
Well, the novel is very enjoyable. It's just an incredible read. If You Were Here, a novel of suspense, it is published by Harper. Alifair Burke, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great
thank
pleasure
you
to
so
have you
so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. The new novel is If You Were Here. It is published by Harper. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.